This is Inspired, where we explore the beliefs shaping our world. I'm your host, Amber Khan. Remaining faithfully distant during religious holidays can be especially challenging. This year, Jewish leaders are describing COVID-19 as the 11th plague. Sunset April 8th marked the beginning of the 8 days of Passover. The religious observance centers on a ritual meal called a Seder and the retelling of the Exodus story from the Old Testament using a Haggadah. It's the script for the Passover Seder and provides the order of the rituals with step-by-step instructions. Haggadah is Hebrew and roughly translates to telling. There are many written in different languages with different content, layouts, and artwork, but their overall structure remains the same. The Passover meals and rituals are laden with symbols to recount the struggle and suffering of the enslaved Jewish people. The story centers on the Pharaoh, who refuses to free the Jewish people, that is, until God sends 10 plagues, each more horrible than the last, until finally the Pharaoh relents. Producer Kimberly Winston explores how some Jewish leaders are finding new meaning in an ancient story of oppression and the struggle for liberation.
I grew up watching Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments on television every year, so the image of the 10th plague is indelibly imprinted on my mind, even 50 years later. A snaky plume of dark smoke moves through the ancient streets and seeps under the doors. There's a scream from inside as the firstborn of the house dies, and then the smoke sneaks out and moves on. But the Jews were warned by God to smear the blood of a lamb on their doorposts, a sign for the angel of death to pass over. This year, as I watch the coronavirus get closer and closer, I can't get that image out of my mind. It terrifies me in a way it hasn't before. So I turn to folks who think deeply about Judaism to ask what they make of this 11th plague of Passover.
I think my first point is just there is no code for deliverance here.
That's Abigail Pogrebin, former president of New York's Central Synagogue, a Reform congregation. She wrote a book called My Jewish Year, 18 Holidays and One Wandering Jew. This Passover, she said, has uncovered what she calls a democracy of vulnerability. Because unlike the first Passover, there is no guaranteed safety from this plague.
At least for me, it's been very hard to fathom that something that used to feel so remote when we told this story at our Seder tables, so antiquated, almost kind of fantastical, this idea of a plague, whether it was locusts, lice, frogs, blood, like, that doesn't touch us today, and it never could, and I'm not even sure it ever did. And now I just believe in it. Like, I believe in this, in the unimaginable thing. I believe in the thing you can't stop, the thing you can't control, the thing that takes over the world.
Pogrebin's idea of a democracy of vulnerability is a striking one. But Rabbi David Wolkenfeld, leader of a modern Orthodox synagogue in Chicago, points out that Jews have marked this holiday under much worse conditions. One elderly member of his congregation observed Passover in Auschwitz. I asked him what he makes of having a real plague this year. It's a reality, he told me. It's a reality that shows us the gap between being a creator and a creation.
So something else I'm grappling with is this pandemic, which really no one alive has experienced this kind of nature imposing itself and just wiping away all of our plans and our dreams and our expectations of having control over our lives and the narrative of our lives, that we were in charge of that. And it's just washed away. And I think pre-modern people would have understood that very well, would have found that experience very common and normal. That's the primal nature of this experience, not just that first Passover. It goes back to Genesis, where the parts of creation, that portion of us, as described in the first chapter of Genesis, is being confronted with the reality of the second chapter of Genesis, where we are not in control over nature. We just live and try to tend to it as best we can, where we don't conquer the world, we tend to it, and where we have to seek out one another to overcome our loneliness.
Rabbi Wolkenfeld, who talks faster than my fingers can take notes, suddenly slowed way down.
I think faith can tell us how God wants us to act, even without that promise of instant reward. God wants us to relieve the suffering of those who are sick and to relieve the loneliness of those who are in isolation and to do what we can to protect human life and the flourishing of human life. I think that's our tradition tells us this is how God wants us to act in all moments and especially in moments of crisis. So we have that same message from God. It's not put the blood over the door. It's save lives by making sure that vulnerable people stay home. Save lives by making sure that everyone who isn't so vulnerable stays home. Save lives by trying to help organize society so that healthcare is supported and given the resources it needs. That's what God's telling us to do, not to paint the blood on the lintels. And I think we do see the outcome of that, just maybe not quite in a direct one-to-one immediate way as was true for our ancestors in Egypt.
Jeffrey Salkin, a Reform rabbi, writes a column called Martini Judaism, as in shaken and stirred. For him, this Passover, which he will celebrate with an online Seder, underscores some foundational truths about what it means to be human.
The name of God that God has at creation is Elohim. Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning, God, Elohim, created. And that Elohim sets forth the natural process. That Elohim could care less about morality. The second name of God is Adonai, and that's the name of God that gives mitzvot and gives moral commandments to the Jewish people. If Elohim is the God of what is, then Adonai is the God of what could be. And so from a scientific point of view, we are constantly dealing with a world of chaos. The only thing that makes life better for us is how we deal with the chaos. This, to me, is the great lesson of this moment in American life.
There it is again, that difference of what it means to be a creator and what it means to be a creation. What are the implications of that difference? Does it separate God from his creation? Or is something more subtle at work?
As I've been saying over and over again, as a great cliche, physical distancing is not social distancing, and social distancing is not spiritual distancing. We're going to have to revisit the texts and all of our traditions about how you serve God alone. In some ways, Christianity and Sufi Islam have it over us, but we Jews have a tradition of sacred aloneness, of finding God in solitude.
Tell me more about that.
Well, in the Jewish moral sources and ethical sources, we find this sense of, in Hebrew, it's called hitbodedut, being able to meditate alone. And it goes into really a sharp contrast with the way the biblical story finds itself laid out in the text. The first thing that God says is not good is human solitude. It is not good for man to be alone.
Right, because he gives him Eve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that what we can take from this is an exalted sense of how do I find myself again in the midst of this chaos and this great massive social disruption. When we talk about what's going on now with this pandemic, we are simultaneously realizing how helpless we are and realizing how much agency we really have. There is now a moral assignment that people are making, which is that it is moral to stay home. It is moral to avoid contact. That's the morality play. Paradoxically, it is our diminishing of community as a hands-on experience that enhances our sense of community as a moral experience.
Rabbi Dennis Eisner, leader of a San Francisco area Reform temple, finds possibilities for community in this year's Passover too.
I absolutely hope that we take advantage of this moment to do exactly that, that whatever it is in this curse, that we figure out what the blessings are, figure out how to do that. That's why we have to keep talking about this in terms of that it's not about any one sector or any one gender or any one, we just can't, because it's not true. And so hopefully what will happen out of moments like this is that we come out stronger. That's the real hope behind all of this, that we learn how to break down some of these things that, you know, we're such a divided country and a divided world right now. And we're divided on all the wrong things. We're divided, you know, not because of mountains and seas and deserts and forests. We're divided because of you have to be wrong in order for me to be right. We're divided because your God is not my God. We're divided because your gender is not my gender. We're divided because your skin color is not my skin color. Your sexuality is not my sexuality. I go down the list, and you have to break that down if society is going to get better and survive. And that is a message. That is, again, the universalistic message that I would preach about Passover right now. While ultimately and sadly, even the Bible doesn't immediately go from the Passover story to a story of coexistence. It just doesn't. But it doesn't mean I have to teach it that way. It doesn't mean I have to believe in it that way. It doesn't mean that we can't learn even from past mistakes and get better at it in the future. And so hopefully this moment becomes that catalyst.
Abigail Pogrebin's Seder table always includes her hand-painted Seder plate, a gift from her mother. This year, there will also be readings that highlight the commitment of the frontline workers, an echo, she says, of the human spirit in the Passover story.
You know, you've never seen such humanity as we are seeing now. We've never seen, you know, people, medical personnel, doctors and nurses coming out of retirement to help. Those of us who are hunkered down in our self-isolation every day are marveling at the grocery workers, the garbage truck drivers, those who are still driving cabs. Like, there are people who are just genuinely much more exposed every day, some acutely exposed. There's some midrash, I wish I could cite it, where someone says we held hands when we crossed the Red Sea. And I think that is an idea of what I'm feeling right now and seeing right now, is that people are not just crossing, holding their own kids. They're reaching out for the person to their right and left, for their neighbor. Obviously, it's the wrong metaphor because you're not supposed to touch right now and hold hands. But we're seeing so much goodness and kindness and selflessness right now. And that to me is the joy of this holiday this year. It's like, look how good people are being to each other.
Goodness and kindness, selflessness and joy, they are there in the story of this Passover, even with an 11th plague outside the door. Maybe they're even more present because of it.
That was Abigail Pogrebin, former president of New York Central Synagogue, a Reform congregation. She wrote My Jewish Year, 18 Holidays, and One Wandering Jew. Rabbi David Wolkenfeld, leader of a modern Orthodox synagogue in Chicago, Anshei Shalom B'nai Israel Congregation. Rabbi Dennis Eisner, senior rabbi of Peninsula Temple Beth El, a Reform synagogue in Los Angeles. And finally, Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, senior rabbi of Temple Salel, a Reform synagogue in Hollywood, Florida. Coming up, reflections on sacrifice, monasticism, and finding ways to love thy neighbor during this Lenten season. This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm your host, Amber Kahn.